Okay, we're back with another podcast. Match Day 12 is done and dusted. I'm here alongside Ross Dunbar. Ross, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
I'm very well. My name is Stefan Minkowski, and today we want to kind of flip the league on its head. We like to try and focus on specific topics on this podcast, and rather than going through the run-of-the-mill fixtures and talking about Leipzig, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund for the 12th time, we thought we'd take a look at the bottom of the league. And Ross, that quite appropriately has us starting with the Nord Derby with, you know, as well, people who have been at follow the league is quite literally the North Derby between Werder Bremen and Hamburg, two teams who are in all sorts of trouble. Let's start with Hamburg because they have, like all the clubs we hope to talk about tonight, they have changed their coach this season. They've even changed their captain. How do you see things at Hamburg? Obviously, picking up on the game, the 2-2 game, and how you think the situation is in Hamburg right now?
Yeah, the situation at Hamburg is quite dangerous because, I mean, everybody knows who follows the Bundesliga that Hamburg are the only team not to have been relegated, and it's kind of like a noose around their neck, pretty much, because they are kind of hamstrung by the fact that we have to avoid this kind of cataclysmic relegation that might happen. And obviously, in the last 2 years, they've come so close. They've only survived through the playoff. Now this is the third time around. You kind of wonder how long they'll be able to keep their head above the water. They've spent. I don't actually have the list of you know, the highest spenders this summer, but you know, with 30 million net spend this summer on new players, almost 200 million in debt, you'd have to say I think Hamburg have probably invested maybe the second or third most in transfers other than Leipzig, Bayern, Dortmund possibly. It's a huge investment and they're not really getting much of a return out of it. The change of coach, in my opinion, was the wrong decision. I mean, I know that Labbadia was not a particularly good coach. He was quite pragmatic. You know, it was all about the basics, but he kept them up. He kept them up and he got them mid-table. I know mid-table last year was pretty easy given the how close the clubs were points-wise. I think they only got something like 41, 42 points, but they still managed to get mid-table and to sack a coach after five games, after drawing 0-0 with, was it 0-0 with Bayern Munich or losing 1-0 in the last minute with Kimmich scoring? That's right, yeah. Sorry, I'm kind of correcting myself as I go along. It just seemed like a very odd decision. I'm not really sure how to sum it up in a very concise way, because you know I've been following the Bundesliga since 2010, 2011. It all kind of goes back to then when the club brought in Frank Arnesen as the sporting director, and they basically got rid of Zé Roberto, they got rid of Matthijssen, the Dutch defender, they got rid of Van Nistelrooy. You're talking a combined maybe 120 international caps. And then they brought in basically Chelsea's reserve team. You know, Michael Mancien came in from Chelsea. Gökhan Töre came in. I'm trying to think of the other players off the top of my head. Not really coming to me, but they brought in players from Chelsea who hadn't even played first-team football. And since then, it's just been a kind of continuous spiral. I mean, like, I've kind of broken it down, as I said to you before I came on air, that they've had 14 coaching changes since 2010. And so if you break that down even further, each coach is maybe getting 4 months or 15 games. And we're getting to a point now, like you said, that with Marcus Gisdol, who's the current coach, that if things don't pick up, maybe he finds himself in a bit of bother come the January window.
Yeah, I think I can agree with most of that. I think perhaps the best way to describe Hamburg is that they're just completely dysfunctional right now. And there seems to be a lot of moving pieces within the club. And there's no real coherent strategy from top to bottom. I think it's quite obvious that the best-run clubs in Germany are often the most successful clubs. Obviously, the obvious examples are like Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund, but even clubs like, you know, Mönchengladbach or Leverkusen. And now, you know, we're beginning to, Schalke fans are now beginning to reap the benefits of a club, of the club finally getting their house in order with Christian Heidel coming in. You know, I think Klaus Michael Kuna, the billionaire fan who's been lending the club money since, what, 2014 to buy players and has largely financed, you know, the spending spree that you mentioned at the start of your little monologue there, which, by the way, if you look at the club's spending, like net spend the last 5 years, they're probably in the top five, top six. And they have brought a number of huge players in. That's one aspect of it. There's also the fact that they now have this new coach, Marcus Gisdol, who, you know, it's quite interesting because when I first saw him, when I first saw him replace Labbadia, and I said on the podcast as well at the time, is that it just looked like he was coming in to do the exact same job as Labbadia, and then, you know, 6 months down the line, he'll be sacked and then someone else would do it. And as you mentioned, these guys get like 4 or 5 months, 15 games, and it's on to the next one. After speaking to people at the club, I've since found out that Gisdol's actually, he's really tried to shake things up. He sacked a lot of the former coaching staff, not really because they were incompetent or anything, but almost entirely because he thought that there was this kind of culture of, you know, culture of defeatism or something about it. He said, that's how I was told anyway, was that he wanted a fresh start with coaching staff. He's came in, he's took the captaincy of Giroud, the central defender, because, you know, he doesn't think that he possesses the right characteristics, or it's not that he's misbehaving, but he doesn't offer that leadership ability. I asked about Sakai, who's now since replaced him as the captain, and said, and I was told, sure, Sakai might not be the loudest guy in the dressing room, but he's the guy who you'll find talking to the young players, and he's a guy who, you know, really offers some, you know, a cool head and really good influence in the changing room. So you've got this billionaire who's spending money at the top of the club. You have Marcus Gisdol in the middle, who's shaking things up and trying to fix things. And we can talk about Gisdol and the team specifically in a moment. But you also have a youth academy, which has completely been revamped over the last couple of years. They're trying their best to revamp that and make it something. So, you know, if you're looking at Hamburg right now as, you know, a number of layers, like, I mean, I guess perhaps metaphor that comes to mind for me is actually is like almost like tectonic plates in the way that they're like kind of grinding against each other, going in different directions and things. And the club just doesn't seem to have that unifying spine in the middle like you have at Schalke or Dortmund or Bayern, that kind of pushes the whole club in one direction.
Yeah, that was actually a really interesting comparison you made with Schalke, because I think that's a really important point, that, you know, Schalke this summer have obviously brought in Christian Heidel as their sporting director, who's a very safe pair of hands. He built Mainz up basically from the bottom. And the way that Schalke have basically rebuilt a lot of their squad is that they've done their business very much behind the scenes. There's not been a lot of kind of, you know, public discourse around, you know, who we're going to sign, or this transfer's falling through, that kind of thing. And you're right what you said. I mean, even though Schalke in the last few years have been a little bit chaotic, they've had a lot of moving parts, as you described it, Christian Heidel has come in alongside Marcus Weinzierl, when there seems to be a sense of unity and cohesion. And I think you look at the results, you look at the way they're performing, the fans are really behind them. There's that kind of unified aspect to it, which is really important. And with Hamburg, you know, in comparison, you have Dietmar Beiersdorfer as the chief executive, who is a very, very kind of, I wouldn't say aggressive figure, but kind of that's the impression I get from what I hear. He's very much his, it's very much his way or the highway, basically. And, you know, when you add in Klaus-Michael Kühne, who has built this massive shipping empire off the back of being a very ruthless businessman, if Kühne says something, that's how it's done. And, you know, and it's especially, I think, very prevalent in their chase for a sporting director, because they've had several kind of embarrassing efforts to bring in a new person over the last few weeks. They looked at Hoogstraeten from Bochum, who has a really good record with youth development and stuff like that. And Bochum said, "Oh, we want, you know, however many millions of euros." And this basically kind of rumbled on in basically in the public media for several days. And it turns out Hamburg then eventually didn't want him. I mean, things like that. I just think it's very poor management that this kind of thing is going on basically in public. And you, like you said, you have so many moving parts. There's no unity. You have the fans who were dead set against this spin-off. I mean, again, this is now getting into very complex territory, that basically Hamburg were a supporter-owned organisation. They spun off their football operations into a public company so that they could get more investment. And the Hamburg fans were dead against that. I think in the shareholders meeting, it was a very narrow thing, very narrow win for them. And yeah, so from that point onwards, like you said, there's just no cohesion at all around the group. And Marcus Gisdol is obviously trying his best. You know, I remember hearing that the morale in the dressing room was never really the problem. And when you, it's just very difficult to see where this is going. I mean, this is the third year, as I said, that the Hamburg are this close to relegation. It's not the worst situation, but it seems as if it's kind of perpetually spiraling into something a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah, I think what's quite interesting is that Kuna seems to be freely talking to the press about his thoughts and his opinions and even his concerns about the club, independently of what the club actually want to put out to the media, which just seems like the most bizarre. I mean, to kind of put it into context for maybe like British or American listeners, it's the equivalent of Abramovich coming out every couple of weeks and making a comment about Chelsea. And then Chelsea's media department are running around with their hair on fire trying to figure out how to deal with that, you know? So I think that kind of sums up how things are going. But having said all that, I actually think in a sporting sense, things are a little more... I'm a little more optimistic. Now, in this game alone, I actually thought Hamburg were the better team. They just looked like a better squad. They looked more likely to score. I think if it wasn't for perhaps an individual performance from one of Werder Bremen's players, who we'll get on to in a moment, I thought Hamburg would have won this game. And I think that's kind of indicative of how things seem to have been. They also managed to bag a 2-2 draw away to Hoffenheim last week, which is no mean feat by it for any team in the league. Hoffenheim, one of only two teams in the division who are still undefeated, bear that in mind. And of course, the week before that, they got thumped off Dortmund, but they also managed to score two goals. And I know Dortmund aren't perfect. In that second half, Hamburg actually really seemed to turn things around of sorts. Two players really stand out for me. I don't know what you think about this, Ross, but Lewis Holtby and Nikolai Müller really seem to be, you know, the key figures that Gisdol really seems to have gotten the best out of since he's came back. We spoke about Lewis Holtby on this podcast a few times now, I think. I'm a big fan of his. I think we maybe said this in the preview to the season, that Holtby's, you know, he's probably too,
yeah, yeah,
he's,
I think
he's too good for Hamburg.
Sorry, cut off there.
He's too good for Hamburg. And, you know, if he continues to show the form that he has in the last couple of games, then I'm pretty convinced that Hamburg can turn this around. The performances are slowly getting better, and the form might not be changing that much, although they have got 2 points in the last two games, which isn't anything to laugh at. In fact, I'd maybe compare them to Schalke again, in the sense that Schalke weren't picking up results. They lost their first five games of the season. But the performances were slowly, gradually getting better, and then eventually gets to a certain threshold, and then that's when you start winning games. And I actually think Hamburg are on that path.
Yeah, that's a big comparison to make, to be fair. I mean, I'm not sure I would say they're on. I'm not sure I would go as far as to say they're on the right path. But certainly the last two games, they've obviously managed to get very decent results. I mean, like you said, Hoffenheim, you know, the stats speak for themselves. They're one of three teams in the whole of, you know, Europe's top five leagues to be unbeaten at this point in the season. Really impressive. And if he can score two goals every game, eventually they're going to win. I mean, I know that's a very simplistic way to look at it. But, you know, if you look at the four games coming up until the winter break, they've got Darmstadt away, they've got Augsburg at home, they've got Mainz away, and they've got Schalke at home. Now, Schalke at home is a bit of a difficult one, given Schalke's form. You'd have to say those three games against Darmstadt, Augsburg and Mainz are winnable, right? I mean, I think if Hamburg performed the way they have done the last two games, then they're more than capable of picking up 7, maybe 9 points out of those games. But as we've seen, Hamburg find it very difficult to actually get over the line against these kind of smaller teams. I think if we look at the squad, you pointed out two players there, Holtby and Müller, who, you know, I agree with you. I like both of those players. I think they take responsibility in difficult situations. They're quite, mobile but quick. They're aggressive. I like those types of players. Gregorich obviously stepped in to replace Bobby Wood. Bobby Wood has been suspended for the last few games, which is a massive loss given how well he started the season. But Gregorich has actually looked pretty promising in those cameo appearances. He scored 2 goals. But a strange player though, because he's quite gangly, and I'm not sure if he's a target man or whether he's a support striker. And I mean, I said to you on air that I am really not a Pierre-Michel Lasoga fan. It's amazing that Hamburg spent 6-7 million euros on this guy. So they don't even have a great squad to choose from. But what they do in the next three or four games, I think will be huge, because the longer that Hamburg are bottom of the league, the more that the pressure is on the board to make a decision about the coach, the more that the players are under pressure. I think Marcus Gisdol said publicly that the players are almost kind of felt quite depressed about the situation, because they're obviously working so hard but not really getting any kind of results.
Yeah, I think I almost agree entirely with all that what you're saying there. I think the Darmstadt game next week in particular, well, this coming weekend actually, for most people listening to this podcast, is going to be huge for them. You know, they can go on and win that game, and then you could really see, from going from a team that had lost, you know, 5 games in a row, they've now gone to a team that have won 1 game and drawn 2 of the last 5. And to pick up 3 points would be huge. It won't pull them out of the relegation zone, but I think a win can, just for their morale, you know, it would offer so much. Problems with this team for me lie in the defence. I think that's pretty clear, actually. I think I really have no idea how Giroud still gets a game for Hamburg. It seems every time I watch him, every game he makes some mistake. I think his sheer athleticism seems to mask a lot of the genuine, you know, things he lacks. He seems to lack a real sense of discipline, a sense of, you know, attention, keeping attention to things. He can't mark for anything, in my opinion. And right now, Hamburg are a team that can attack well and have a lot of options to attack. We forget that they've got Felipe Kostic from Stuttgart, who has been, you know, pretty abject for them, but he's still a player who on any given day can win a game. But I'm still waiting for players like, I mean, Jura's the obvious standout for me, and one who, you know, if the club are going into the January transfer window, I know Bundesliga teams don't tend to spend money, but Hamburg really have to, and if there's one position I'd say they have to invest in, it's a centre-back to replace Giroud. But we're also still waiting for Santos, this left-back, the Brazilian left-back, to actually really kick on. I really thought he was going to be a really big player for them this season. He hasn't really offered that much from left-back. So I think in terms of that, we have to see if... I applaud the way that the midfield and attack seems to have gone better. And really interesting, actually, that Gregorich scores 2 goals in this game against Werder Bremen while Bobby Wood's out. And I think Wood's now back for this coming weekend. It'd be interesting to see if Gregorich again goes back on the bench to play as this kind of impact sub, or whether Wood has to wait his turn for Gregorich's form to maybe fall back down, because a team like Hamburg can't really afford to drop a guy who scores 2 goals in the last game. But Bobby Wood was one of their biggest signings of the summer, so it'll be interesting to see how Gisdol deals with that. Anything else, Dad?
No, nothing on Hamburg. Maybe we should move on to the other northern team in a complete shambles right now, is Werder Bremen.
Yeah.
They've had a very interesting spell under their current coach, Alexander Nuri, who was promoted from the under-23s. They had a really good start. They beat Bayer Leverkusen. They beat Wolfsburg. And everyone kind of thought, okay, maybe Bremen are coming out of the bottom 3 and 4 positions. But they've descended into kind of the same farce that they have basically had for the last 5 or 6 years. They lost 3-1 at home to Freiburg, which I mean, that's a pretty embarrassing result for Werder Bremen. They lost 3-1 at Schalke, okay. You can give them the benefit of the doubt there. They lost 2-1 at home to Frankfurt. Then they failed to beat their rivals, Hamburg. It's a very delicate situation with Bremen because I think maybe unlike Hamburg, I think from middle to front they have like genuinely proven quality. They've got Max Kruse, they've got Pizarro, both players played a part in this derby. And of course, as we talk about Serge Gnabry, who, you know, amidst all of this kind of chaos at Werder Bremen, you know, with the worst defensive record in the league, this is the guy who's kind of standing out as being an exceptional player. And obviously that was the reason he went to Bremen from Arsenal. I mean, people would have probably looked at that as quite a weird transfer, you know, going from, you know, such a good club at Arsenal to Bremen, who for the last few years have been in relegation difficulty. But, you know, this was exactly the platform that he has needed to show how good he actually is. He scored 5 goals and set up 2 this season. So he's kind of the one standout player, I think, for Bremen. I mean, what's your take on this? On this squad, do you think they're in danger? I mean, they're third bottom. Do you think they're in danger this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think it's really, like you mentioned with Gnabry, I think Gnabry seems to be performing in, you know, irrespective of how Bremen are. He's the one for me who really, really won them a point in this game on Saturday, which I don't really think they deserve to win a point from. And he's got some good stats this season, and he seems to continually perform. And I guess that's what you'd expect from a player of his talent who's playing in this team who are, you know, really not offering much. I think they, in a similar sense to Hamburg, have a really important game this weekend in Ingolstadt. I think at home against Ingolstadt, that's the kind of game they really have to win. And, you know, if they don't, then might not. I mean, the board must be looking at Alexander Nuri thinking, right, okay, maybe we made a mistake here, because I'm actually willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. In the last few games they played, sure, if they lose to Leipzig, that's fine. If they lose to Schalke, that's fine. You lose to Frankfurt, that's fine. That's three of the most informed teams in Germany right now. And then managing to walk away from that game against Hamburg with a draw, even though they didn't perform that well, I'm also willing to give them the benefit of the doubt there. But they really have to beat Ingolstadt, in my opinion. They've got a away game against Hertha. I actually don't think Hertha have been playing particularly well so far. And then they're at home to Cologne, who I also don't think have been playing that well. I think both Hertha and Cologne right now, despite what the form table might show, they're not actually playing particularly well. Both teams are actually depending a lot on almost goals from nothing from Ibisevic and Modesta. But it's tough. It really is tough, because they've got, after that Ingolstadt game, they go up to Berlin, then they're at home to Cologne, then they're away to Hoffenheim. So this game against Ingolstadt, on paper, is really the only game you can see them picking up points before the end of the season. Now, if you compare that to the record, the run of form, or the run of fixtures that we just mentioned with Hamburg, you could see, Bremen right now are sitting 4 points above Hamburg, but if you could see Hamburg overtake them before Christmas. And I think that's really interesting. I think that could possibly be a problem, even though, as I just said, I don't think Bremen are playing they're not playing well, but they're not playing great at the moment either. So I think ultimately what we have to kind of consider here, and I think if you're a Werder Bremen fan, if you're Alexander Neuer, you have to think not so much how good are we, but rather how many teams in the league are worse than us. Because when you have teams like Frankfurt and Cologne and Hertha and Hoffenheim doing well, it pushes everyone else down a table. And if you're a Hamburg or a Bremen fan, you have to look at the Bundesliga table and think, is there any space for us up there? And the only two teams that really stand out for me right now are Darmstadt and Ingolstadt, who are right down there with Hamburg and Bremen. And that should be the key for me. For me, if I'm a Hamburg or a Werder Bremen fan, I'm not thinking, God, we have to get out of this relegation zone. I'm thinking, we have to at least keep tabs on Ingolstadt or Darmstadt, or at least go above them before the Christmas break. There's also another team who we'll go on to mention in a minute, who are also down there, who could also finish below them. But once you get down there, once you go up to maybe like above 13th, there's not many teams I can see who might drop, who might just lose their form and start tumbling down the league table. Maybe Augsburg, that tends to happen to them actually in the last couple of seasons. They have, the form seems to dwindle near the end of the season, and it's not particularly good as it stands. But if I'm Werder Bremen, I'm looking at that game against Ingolstadt thinking, Ingolstadt are only 2 points behind Bremen. They have to pick up 3 points in that game, because that could be the only points they pick up between now and Christmas.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And it really shines a kind of magnifying glass on this weekend, because, like you said, obviously Bremen at home to Ingolstadt and Hamburg away at Darmstadt, that will kind of give us an indication, I think, as to how this relegation battle is going to pan out. Because I think at the start of the season, everyone unanimously kind of predicted that Darmstadt and Ingolstadt would be the two worst teams in the league. But it's not really worked out that way. Darmstadt have actually been a little bit better than I expected under Norbert Meyer, and they seem to play at home with a chip on their shoulder. That's just the kind of nature of the club. They are kind of the lowest kind of funded club in the league. I think it's something like 13, 14 million euros per year. But I actually think with Bremen, they have got some good players. I mean, with Hamburg, I struggle to see kind of really proven players with, you know, leadership and players who can take responsibility in big moments. And I look at Bremen by comparison, and I think they have that. They have Pizarro, they have Kruse, two very established international players. They've got Gnabry, like you said, they've got Junuzovic, who's still there. Finn Bartels continuously performs well above what I expected he could do. The problem, it clearly is in defence. And I kind of wonder with Bremen, though, if we might see a change of coach in January, regardless. Nouri obviously came in initially as an interim coach to replace Skripnik, but I still wonder if they might consider bringing in a safe pair of hands in January. I mean, the kind of overarching kind of point of both of these clubs is that they're so focused on the short term, i.e. the financial implications of being relegated, that there's very little long-term kind of planning or long-term strategy at either club. And you can, I guess we're going off on a tangent here, but if you compare both clubs to, say, Freiburg, who are a bit of a yo-yo team, you know, they're up and down, but they kind of embrace that instability, and they've obviously got a really good sporting director in Jochen Sayer. They've got a coach in Christian Streich who has been there through promotions, he's been there through relegations, you know, and I think that stability kind of works for them, whereas with Bremen and Hamburg, they are kind of hamstrung by history. And that's a good segue with history onto to Wolfsburg, who, you know, were German champions 7 years ago. They played in the Champions League in the last couple of years. They got to the quarterfinals last year, if I'm right. Mm-hmm. They are in a bit of a predicament as well.
Let me just talk through what we seem to have been gathering from the German media right now. At least based on what the German media are suggesting and the predicament that Wolfsburg are in. Now we can talk about the actual football in a moment, but before we do, we should probably consider the fact that with the current sanctions and fines that Volkswagen have been hit by the German government for the Dieselgate, the issues with the sheer amount of fumes that their cars are giving off, blah 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 blah. There's now suggestions that Wolfsburg's funding from the parent company Volkswagen is about to be cut by about 30%. Now the German media are suggesting that they get paid about 100 million a year from Wolfsburg, and that's to be cut by 30%. And we're expecting, as the club comes up to the AGM, that this will be announced and the club will be asked to change their focus from buying players, which they have done over the last couple of years with varying degrees of success, to promoting their own players. Now, that in itself has its own problem, because they had plans to build a 40 million euro youth academy, and that's also been scrapped. So Volkswagen have actually, their other sport enterprise that they have is the World Rally Championship team. That's been completely disbanded, and it looks as though Wolfsburg, who are the football club, obviously, their funding is going to be cut by a considerable margin. Ross, add this into the fact that they can't seem to win any games right now. The fact that Julian Draxler seems to be in another huff. It looks as though he's going to be off. On a scale to one, from one to Armageddon, how bad are things for Wolfsburg right now?
I wouldn't say it's Armageddon just yet. But the coaching situation, let's start with that. That's pretty peculiar to me. I think everyone kind of agreed that Dieter Hetting had kind of outstayed his time at the club. He had done really, really well to obviously get them as runners-up in the league. 2 years ago and to win the German Cup and get them into the latter stages of the Champions League for the first time. I think you have to give him immense credit for that. But he was a coach who, I don't want to discredit his work, but you have to bear in mind that you had Kevin De Bruyne there, who even at that point was one of the best attacking players in Europe, and you had Bas Dost there, who was scoring basically every week. But with Valerian Ismail, who has come in from the under-23 squad, I don't really know what Wolfsburg are trying to achieve by this appointment. I'm not really understanding the logic. You wonder whether it's a case of they've just run out of options at this point in the season, because obviously midway through a campaign, it's very difficult to bring in a coach. Not many coaches will leave their club to go to another club, and especially in Germany, where most recruitment is done in, you know, domestically. So I'm still yet to be convinced by that. I mean, they've had some poor results of late. Obviously, losing to Schalke at home. I think there's issues there. Mario Gomez, for example, was a massive investment. He's only scored 3 goals. They've only scored 10 goals overall this season, 3 of them in one game. And I think it's a very, very precarious situation because they've got a really difficult run-in to the winter break. They've got Hertha Berlin at home. They've got Bayern away. They've got Frankfurt at home. And they've got Mönchengladbach at home. Now, three home games out of 4 is encouraging, but they're playing essentially 4 of the top 6 teams in the league. And you might find by the end of December, things are looking a little bit more ominous for Wolfsburg. And I don't know about you, but I think relegation would be really, really bad for this club. Even comparison with Hamburg and Bremen, who have these huge financial implications, I just think for Wolfsburg as a club, I think it would be devastating for the city. I think it would be devastating for their attendances. And I don't think they would find it very easy to get back into the Bundesliga if they went down.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, obviously, Hamburg and Werder Bremen have the fan support that kind of galvanised them on, as we see in a lot of cases in Bundesliga, for example. You know, with
if you look at Stuttgart by comparison, they're getting, you know, 55,000 every week in the second division.
Exactly. I mean, I've been to Wolfsburg a few... I've actually only been once this year. But, you know, they do have fans. I mean, it's such a myth, I think, to suggest that they're this plastic club that don't have fans. They do have fans. Everyone who lives in the town has something to do with Volkswagen. So there is a, maybe an odd sense of a family sense about the club. But you're right. I don't really know what would happen to this club if they got relegated. And as things stand, it looks as though that might be the case because... of the three teams we've now mentioned today, I think they're probably the most unlikely to turn things around, which is kind of weird because they clearly have the best squad of the three. And, you know, the signings that they brought in looked quite smart this summer. Bringing in someone like Jakub Blaszczykowski, who's a real worker, he's a real workhorse in any team. And you think he'd be only good for a dressing room as chaotic as Wolfsburg seems to be. And obviously they brought Gerhardt in as well, who's a really young, exciting player. But I just don't really know what's going on. The club kind of remind me a lot of, you know, the way we were talking about Hamburg earlier on, where you have a director of football, Klaus Allofs, who every time he's in front of a camera, he looks more and more exhausted. He looks more and more dejected. He looks unhappy. And to just kind of hire Valerian Ismail as the coach just suggests, like, yeah, you know what, we don't know what we're doing. Or, you know, there were suggestions that his boss was linked with the job and then he got offered this one in China with more money, which is fair enough. He decided to move on to there. But you do wonder what's going on. You know, their fixtures so far, like you said, it's really worrying. They were really fortunate, I thought, to actually even pick up a point against Ingolstadt. Their goal was deflected and it ended up deflected and going top into the right-hand pocket of the goal. Could have and probably should have lost that game. And there's absolutely nothing about Ismail that suggests that he's going to turn things around. And as we've said numerous times, I think, Ross, you're probably one of the most adamant critics, actually, in this regard, that Wolfsburg seems like a club that players go to and they seem to lose all sort of drive and ambition. I mean, is that something that you think ultimately has come to cost them so far?
The term that I tend to use is holiday camp. Basically, players going there and yeah, I mean, players are entitled to make those decisions, go to a club and get big hefty contracts. But from a career point of view, I don't see how that necessarily is of benefit to them. I think something has to be said for just a lack of intensity around the club. I know that it's something very hard to quantify, but I think if you play for Dortmund, if you play for Schalke, if you play for Hamburg, if you mention Gladbach, you have to work every single day really hard because the fans will hold you accountable. I don't see that at Wolfsburg. I think it's a case of, yeah, we're in the Bundesliga, you know, we'll turn up, you know, maybe like it's almost kind of like an entertainment to the employees of Wolfsburg. I know that's a very cynical way to look at it, but that's kind of was one of the reasons why the club was formed. I know it was a workers' club in general, but it was kind of for Volkswagen employees. And like I say, I just think when the going gets tough, I'm not sure Wolfsburg have, first of all, the players, secondly, the manager, and third of all, the kind of overall kind of culture around the club to survive a relegation battle. I think Darmstadt, by comparison, would really dig in when it really matters. We saw that last season when they stayed up. They had players and they had leaders. They had a coach who galvanised everyone. And Wolfsburg just don't have any of that. So to kind of summarise, I'm a bit worried about Wolfsburg, actually. I think even with players like Mario Gomez, with Julian Draxler, who perhaps might not be there after the January transfer window, players like Yannick Gerhardt, who, like you said, is a really talented young player, Jeffrey Bruma, guys like this, I still would have to say that I think Wolfsburg are in deep trouble. Those four games are not encouraging. And yeah, let's see where they are in January and let's see how the Volkswagen situation affects them, because that's a really interesting subplot, I think, to how this season's going to pan out for them.
Yeah, I think one thing I'd maybe add to that is that the kind of peculiar aspect to Wolfsburg's season is that they've actually got a really decent away record. They're like fifth, yeah, they're fifth in terms of away points this season, which seems kind of baffling. They're alongside Cologne and Augsburg, yet their home form is the second worst in the league, which now on the face of it might suggest, yeah, sure, they don't play in front of their own fans because they don't have fans, blah, blah, blah. to me, that actually suggests that, again, Ismaël doesn't actually know what he's doing. I'll explain that. I think teams who play on the road, when they have players that are set up for counter-attacking, they play better on the road. So basically, a counter-attacking team tends to get better results on the road because when they go to another team or when they go to an away match, the hosts tend to be more attacking. So in terms for Wolfsburg, you know, they can go up against teams like Ingolstadt or Freiburg, or maybe even like, God, who's I was trying to think now in the past? I don't know, like Hoffenheim, actually, one of the first games they played. Obviously, that was still under Dieter Hecking, but they just simply based on the fact that they have players who are good on the break, they tend to be better set up to deal with teams who offer a bit more space. It's when they come up against teams at home, for example, Schalke and Leverkusen, the last two home games they played, that's when things begin to fall apart because they're asked to then be, you know, they're asked to be far more coherent. They're asked to have some sort of tactics to deal with these teams. They're asked to break teams down. And because I don't think they actually have a proper coach in place, that's when the wheels start to fall off. Now, to suggest that, now you could probably sit there and say, oh, well, if they've got like the fourth or fifth best away form in the league, they might be okay. That's fine, but the problem is their next two home game, their next two away games before the winter break are Bayern Munich and then Borussia Mönchengladbach, as you mentioned earlier. Now, Gladbach are they're hardly a team on form either right now, but that's the very end, that's the last game before Christmas, and before they get there, they might be looking at three straight defeats. And if they don't pick up anything in that Gladbach game, I think you and I were both probably agreed that, you know, Ismaël was brought in as a temporary position. And I think Klaus Allofs might be spending his Christmas holidays preparing a contingency plan for if they get relegated, and B, a coach who'd be willing to come in January to try and turn things around. It would take a brave man, in my opinion, but you know the players are still there. I know you're right in saying that they've got some dodgy characters in that team. Julian Draxler is perhaps the most obvious one. Maybe they can offload him in January. I'm a fan of Draxler, but If Wolfsburg can get PSG to offer us anywhere near the amount of money they want, then I would take it, and maybe spend that money on three or four really good players in January to try and shore up that defence and just maybe bring in a decent coach, and then just be like, right, okay, wipe the slate clean, we start again here, and see how it goes, because there's still not much going on at the bottom league in terms of points. There's still a lot of space, there's still a lot of ground to be made. And at the end of the day, Wolfsburg do have a squad that should be finishing mid-table easily. So still time for them to turn things around. But as things stand, I wouldn't be surprised if come the winter break, we're looking at Ingolstadt, Darmstadt and Wolfsburg in the bottom three, while Hamburg and Bremen are probably sitting up there with Gladbach and Augsburg as teams who tend to win and lose one week to the next. And I guess that calls that then, Ross. What do you say? We done?
Yeah, finished.
Finito. So we will be back next week. Our apologies for not getting us out on Monday. As things stand, I think three of the four members of this podcast are in separate countries. I'm in the UK, Davis is in the United States, and Ross, you're in Spain. So it does prove troublesome, but we appreciate everyone who comes along, listens to the podcast. And as ever, you can, of course, get in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter at the Tribune Podcast. And again, as ever, we're always really grateful for you guys for jumping on iTunes and leaving us comments and leaving us ratings. I do check them, and I have seen people are making the effort to go out and give us a ranking. So we do genuinely appreciate it. We know a lot of podcasts just say that, but we really do appreciate it. And of course, any love you guys have for us or any questions you have for us, you can always get in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter. We do try and get back to you guys as quick as possible. And yeah, Ross, you and I quite like a good rammy on Twitter, so we're always up for questions and debates, aren't we?
Yeah, well, we often disagree about things.
Yeah, if you think this podcast is bad, you should see us on Twitter. Ross, where can the guys get you on Twitter?
You can follow me on Twitter at RossDunbar93. Yep. My ramblings and gifs and good patter.
Debatable. And you're also on Facebook at RossDunbar. You've got a Facebook page, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
And I am on Twitter at SBienkowski, and you can get me on Facebook at ByStefanBienkowski. Yeah, and I guess that's that. We'll see you guys next week for a whole new set of topics, and I look forward to a good weekend of Bundesliga football.